It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast presented today by BetDSI.com. We've got one more big NFL game to play. It is the Super Bowl. We'll be breaking that game down next week. But you might want to start to get some of your bets in now. And BetDSI, our buddies over there, will give you a free $15 as long as you use the code Tucker15. Again, Tucker15, you get a free $15. What is better than that? BetDSI.com. You can do other sports too if you want. I mean, it's up to you. I'm just telling you, there's nothing wrong with getting a free $15 at BetDSI.com using the code Tucker15. No games to break down today, Evan. So instead, we're going to have a guest that I'm very excited about. And then maybe we'll get to some email questions at the end as well. It depends on how long we go with today's guest. He's Warren Sharp. He is aptly named last name because this is one smart cookie. Let's do it.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, as promised, we are now joined by the man behind Sharp Football, and he's got the Twitter handle to prove it, at Sharp Football, Warren Sharp. You might know him for his gambling advice. You might know him for the articles he wrote about Deflategate and the Patriots fumbling, or lack thereof, I should say. We know him as this week's guest on the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. Warren, it's Ross, it's Evan. Always good to have you aboard, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. I love breaking down the games with you, discussing the NFL. Two great hosts, so happy to be here.
Awesome. So, Warren, I know I gave you the intro there, but for people that aren't as familiar with you as Evan and I are, what exactly are you all up to these days, and where can people find you?
Well, this year I launched my new stats website, sharpfootballstats.com, and that site is basically a visual look at NFL statistics to help people get a better perspective of the game, the efficiencies of football, success rates, other important stats that they might not be aware of, but also be able to picture them as opposed to just see them listed out on a page in black and white text. So that's been a really neat project. I'm looking forward to continuing that in the future season. That's been going over pretty well. And then over at my other website, sharpfootballanalysis.com, that's where I kind of provide detailed analysis, game predictions, prognostication for both sports betting as well as Evan and I, as Evan has done with me. We do some podcasts going over, you know, forecasts for daily fantasy as well, looking at matchups and things of that nature. So it's been a lot of fun breaking down the 2016 NFL season.
Awesome. Love it. Now, you're here on a fantasy podcast. So do you feel like your stuff is more for gambling, fantasy, or at this point, is there even a line in between the two?
That's a great question. I think Evan would actually be the perfect guy to ask that to as well. But I think for me personally, it starts with just understanding football and winning football efficiently, how teams will match up with one another, what they should be doing to maximize their opportunities against their given opponent, and then what we think that they will do. And sometimes those aren't the same thing. And once you understand that, and once you have the metrics and the statistics to properly gauge the results, it's applicable to both gambling or daily fantasy, in my opinion. They really go hand in hand. They're two totally different elements, but they do get intertwined. And it starts with the root of understanding football itself. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, approach it with the perspective of, well, I just want to learn about, you know, sports betting and what's this team ATS, you know, when they go on the road or when they're playing on turf or things of that nature. They don't understand football. And other guys from Daily Fantasy just look at, well, what's the, this guy's projected to score this many points, so he must be better. It doesn't start with the basic things. It starts with the understanding of football itself.
Love it. Now, you're obviously on the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. So this is the first one of these we're doing this year, where we get an expert like yourself on the line and get a chance to kind of look back now that the DFS season and really all fantasy football is behind us with only the Super Bowl to be played. So my question is just looking, and I know you should never really just take 1 year and extrapolate stuff from that, but based on what we saw this year, what are the biggest lessons that you'll take forward going into next year and you would recommend other people take heed as well?
Well, I think one of the things, certainly, if you look at the postseason and the teams that got to the postseason, advanced in the postseason, I mean, 2 weeks ago we had the final eight teams, and of those final eight teams, seven of them ranked top 10 in offensive success rate efficiency. Seven of those eight were, you know, the most efficient offenses in the NFL, and their defenses, only a couple of those defenses actually ranked that high. Most of the defenses were far worse. The only offense that made it to the divisional round was the Houston Texans, which did not rank inside the top 10. So this was really an offensive-oriented season. The best offenses with the best quarterbacks, the most efficient and productive offenses were the ones that were winning games. And I think in some cases with so many mediocre defenses, it became what do you have on offense that can compensate for your poor defense? Are you an offense that can either control the ball a lot and keep your defense rested? Or are you an offense that can simply outscore the other team? Can you get out to a big lead early and make the other team try to play catch up? There's a lot of things that went into offenses winning games this year. And so I'm going to look a little bit at my metrics this offseason before I come up with my 2017 Football Preview magazine. And I'm going to study, you know, why weren't these teams' defenses as good as what they maybe were expected to be heading into the season. I mean, you look at Atlanta, they ranked 31st in defensive success rate this year. They obviously had higher hopes under Dan Quinn year two, but there's some injuries, personnel issues in the secondary, but why wasn't this defense better? They've got a lot of young guys. Maybe they'll continue to improve. So I'm going to look through and see if there's any important trends to carry forward. And then I think one of the other things I would mention is the fact that we have this trend where these teams were coming in and hiring these offensive coordinators to be their head coaches. And I think that that's fascinating to study how ineffective that strategy has been.
Awesome. Well, I might have one or two more for you, but I'm sure Evan has quite a few up his sleeve. So I'm going to hand it over to Evan so you guys can talk at a higher level.
Warren, one of your trademark statistics is early down success rate and how it has been a tremendous predictor for what is to come in NFL games and, you know, for in terms of how successful teams are going to be in general. Can you talk a little bit about what early down success rate is and how it might be applicable to Super Bowl 51?
Yeah, so early down success rate is an analytic that I created. I'm always trying to think of new ways to analyze the game of football. And it basically, in a nutshell, I mean, there's some things behind the scenes that go into it, but it basically looks at how effective you are at avoiding third downs, more or less. That's what it boils down to. Because every football broadcast, and Ross, you could probably attest to this, you know, one of the main graphics that they flash up there is, what is this team on third down? How successful have they been at converting third downs? What rarely is discussed, but is actually far more important, is how often are you even getting forced into third down? And conversely, how often are you forcing your opponent into third down when you're playing defense? That's the bigger statistic. That's more important, carries far more weight than actually what you do when you are on third downs. The best offenses are avoiding third downs altogether. And in the postseason specifically, I can tell you early down success rate is like pretty much the number one indicator apart from turnovers. And we know that turnovers is very difficult to predict. Teams who have a +2 turnover margin or better, meaning they've recorded two or more takeaways and they haven't given their opponent any, or they gave one, but they've gotten three, they're +2. These teams cover the spread and win games at roughly an 88% clip. So it's almost unbeatable. If you can win the turnover battle by a margin of +2, you're almost assuredly going to win the game almost 9 out of 10 times. But we can't predict that. It's hard to figure out which team in a given situation will be up +2. So So if you eliminate the teams with a +2 turnover margin, look at all the other statistics, there's a ton that people utilize to try to help forecast games. Yards per pass attempt is one that people like to say, okay, well, the team that won the yards per pass attempts battle win X percentage of time, and the teams who have more total yards or the teams who are better on third down or yards per rushing attempt, or we always hear this total rushing yards or total carries on the ground, you know, well, when this team has, you know, 20 plus carries, then they're, they, you know, this is their record. The reality is none of those actually are as strong as the team who performs better on early down success rate in that game, which hits at an 84% against the spread rate. It dictates that the team is going to win basically almost 85% of the time. And so the point being here is, in this particular game, it's so much of a factor in the postseason. Is this metric is even more indicative of which team's going to win the game in the postseason than it is in the regular season. It's vital for both the Patriots and the Falcons to try to stay very efficient on first and second down. Specifically, if you look at the Falcons on offense, you know, they face so many third and long conversions against the Packers that they're not going to have nearly that level of success, in my opinion, against a team like the New England Patriots. When they have you 2 weeks to prepare and Bill Belichick has been able to scheme up what he's going to do when you're in a third and long situation, it's very difficult to convert those. So the Atlanta Falcons absolutely positively have to be productive on first and second down. And sometimes it's just reducing the number of deep shot plays that you take, because those hit at typically a pretty low percentage. It's far more efficient to, you know, the Steelers were really guilty of that against the Patriots last week. It would be first and 10, and they'd be throwing a shot play down the field to some of their no-name wide receivers who were just dropping the ball, or Sammy Coates, or this guy or that guy. And then they're faced with second and long, and then they're inevitably in third down. So it's about getting consistent gains on first and second down and avoiding third down as much as possible.
Awesome. I love that statistic. I thought that this would be an interesting topic to ask you about, Warren, because I know you have strong feelings about this. Every year we see teams making big investments into, like, offensive coordinators to become their head coach. Right now, looks like Kyle Shanahan is going to San Francisco. What are your thoughts on teams making these huge investments into, you know, offensive coordinators who, you know, they tend to be young. They tend to be, you know, very successful in their OC role, but, you know, it can really go either way. And it seems to be not even particularly successful when they become head coaches. What are your thoughts on that tendency that NFL teams have to dump money into offensive coordinators to become their head coaches?
Yeah, I think this is perfect right up Ross's alley in terms of what his take is on this. But from my personal opinion, I do not like it when you have a very successful offensive coordinator and you try to make him be not just your head coach. It's fine if he becomes your head coach if he's going to give up the play calling duties. But in order to call plays successfully at the NFL level currently, you have to be innovative. You have to be creative. You have to be very in tune and understanding, self-aware of what your team's offense is in order to maximize its efficiency. You have to study the defense tremendously. You have to work really closely with your own quarterback. And in my opinion, the best teams, and we're seeing two of them on the field on Sunday, next Sunday, they attack the opponent's weakness every single week. They're changing things up, tinkering with the offense on a weekly basis. And that's how you're going to find the most success. It's very difficult to do all of those things while wearing a head coaching cap, while supervising all the other issues that go on, talking to the media more frequently, dealing with defensive issues. I mean, look at Bill Belichick. He's the perfect guy. He will come in and help fix things on defense. He will help fix things on special teams when they need to be fixed. He'll help look at personnel if somebody was injured. Who are we going to bring up? There's so many different things that a head coach has to be responsible for. These offensive coordinators, a lot of these offenses, if you look at, for instance, Sean McVay with the Washington Redskins, who just got hired, you look at Kyle Shanahan, it's obvious how much time these guys are spending attentive to detail, focused on the game plans for the upcoming week, working with their quarterbacks. I mean, they're investing all of their time into that. And it's no doubt in my mind that these guys lose a little bit of their edge, a little bit of their punch, if they're going to try to call plays as a head coach. I would much rather, and I think that this is across the NFL in general, great head coaches do not get paid enough, and offensive coordinators should be paid very close to head coaches, especially if they're really good. Like, I would rather keep Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta, and if he's making $6 million a year in San Francisco, I'd rather Atlanta just pay him that. Look, Arthur Blank, he's dancing in his suits. He's got money. They don't need to spend they don't need to conserve money at the offensive coordinator role. It doesn't even affect the salary cap. Pay enough to keep these good offensive coordinators in their role. And I know a guy like Kyle Shanahan, it might be more notoriety. He could make a bigger name for himself going somewhere else. But look at this week. What is everybody talking about when they're talking about this game? They're rarely even talking about Dan Quinn. They're talking about Kyle Shanahan. So I think even if you have a great offense and you're a great offense coordinator, you're still going to get the press and the publicity, even if you're not that head coach, but you're going to be able to do a much better job at that role.
Speaking of the Falcons offense, you and I did a podcast before the conference championship games, and you compared the Atlanta Falcons offensive approach to Blitzkrieg, which was a World War II tactic. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on that and what really makes this Falcons offense so special?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody out there listening is like a military buff or focuses on, you know, military history, Blitzkrieg was a German tactic utilized during World War II, and obviously this is football, this is not war. We're not going to compare the two, but tactically, it's very interesting, some of the correlations. You know, the term Blitzkrieg actually means lightning war. And it was a tactic that the Germans used to create disorganization extremely quickly amongst the enemy through the use of speed and surprise. And what they would do is they'd create like these very quick and short, powerful attacks to pierce the line of defense, and they unbalanced their enemy. And it was very difficult for the enemy to recover. And the actual goal of this tactic, it's funny how the goal actually is, was to create a short military campaign to preserve their own life force and their ammunition. And the same is actually true. I mean, there's a lot of parallels. If you look at the way that the Atlanta Falcons attack, right now, last two games included, they have moved into the second highest scoring offensive team in the first half in NFL history. The only team that has scored more points in the first half on average was the 2007 New England Patriots. Obviously, everybody knows 18-0 and ended up losing in the Super Bowl to the New York Giants. That was the only team that scored more out the gate. There's a couple other teams like the 98 Elway-led Broncos that won the championship and the 2014 Packers. And then, you know, the Mike Martz, Kurt Warner Rams of 99 and 2001 that fell just behind what Atlanta has done this year. They get out quickly as fast as possible and just dial everything up. Everything is in the playbook early in the game. They'll go deep. They'll run tons of different formations. They'll look to use pre-snap motion to understand what the defense is doing. They'll dictate things to them, and they get very aggressive. They know that their defense is not very good. And so what their goal is to get points on the board quickly so that your offense, the opposing team's offense, now is facing the situation at halftime where we are down 13 points, 10 points, 14 points, whatever the score is, we have to change something on our offense to score points quicker. And inevitably, it will make that opposing team's offense less effective, less efficient than they normally would be. Because if that team was able to just stay in their lane and do the things that they want to do offensively with the game plan they were planning on coming into the game, more than likely, they'll probably have success against the Falcons. I mean, the Patriots, more than likely, their offense will have some success against the Falcons if they do what they want to do. But if the Falcons are able to get up big on the Patriots early in this game and force the Patriots to change some things up, you know, okay, LeGarrette Blount's out the door. We can't really even use him now in the second half because we're trailing by so much and we have to do X, Y, and Z to keep pace with these guys. That's when the New England Patriots offense is not going to be quite as effective and efficient as maybe they would be if they were more balanced on offense and things of that nature. So I think it's remarkable. Nobody's really talking about the style and strategy that Atlanta uses right out the gates. And I think it's really an interesting correlation with this blitzkrieg tactic.
Awesome. So I think next week we are going to make the Fantasy Feast podcast just talk about betting props. for the Super Bowl, just talk about specific props, you know, try to hit on a lot of them. And the props haven't even come out yet. I think they come out on Thursday, tomorrow. We're taping this on Wednesday. But are there any things that we should be thinking about before the props come out? You know, like anything in particular to look for, Warren?
Well, I think that there's two key matchups in this game that are probably going to go a long way. Of course, you know, a defense could get a key turnover, things like that, which, again, are hard to forecast. But something could change this game, you know, through one key stop or a turnover. But I think the two key matchups are the pass rush efficiency of these offenses, of these defensive lines against the offenses. That's number one. And then the offense's use of passing to the running backs in the pass game, mm-hmm. now that Deion Lewis is healthy. And I think that both teams have dramatic edges. Look, New England's pass rush, they ranked 26th, and they played the number one easiest schedule of opposing offensive lines. It's the fifth easiest pass rush that the Atlanta Falcons offensive line has faced this year. So that's going to be an interesting edge and should allow the Atlanta Falcons to pass the ball more often against this secondary. And then on the flip side, Atlanta's pass rush ranks 24th. New England's pass protection on offense ranks 6th. We've talked about in the past what Dante Scarnecchia has done with this offensive line. The whole is greater than some of their parts. They're playing extremely well together. So I think New England offensively is going to have time to pass the ball as well on these defenses. So that's going to put a lot of pressure on the secondary. And we know, like, Bill Belichick's tactics, he likes to grab, hold, pull. He'll try to do a lot of things. And it's great, this cat and mouse game, because Kyle Shanahan can use a lot of late motion. He can dictate a lot of things to the defense, stacking receivers and things of that nature, using pick routes and whatnot to try to get free from the tight coverage. Inevitably, that's going to be there. But one of the important elements that should not be overlooked is passing to the running backs. New England ranks 24th at defending passes to the running backs, whereas Atlanta's offense is the fourth best. And Atlanta's defense ranks 30th defending passes to the running backs. That's something New England hasn't done a whole lot of this year in terms of successfully. They played without Deion Lewis, obviously, as you know, for the bulk of the season. New England threw a lot of passes to the running backs. It was the fourth most in the NFL so far. They've thrown 130 passes to running backs this year. But this will be the easiest team to use the running back pass option on that New England will have faced all year long. They played the 11th toughest schedule heading into this game. So I think with Deion Lewis, now they're healthy, they'll have a lot of opportunities to get the ball out to Deion Lewis underneath and for him to gain some additional yards after the catch there. And I just mentioned, you know, New England's defense has not played great overall. Their schedule, though, is really interesting. They've played a number of teams who were not very good at using the running back pass option, and they ranked right about league average in those games. But when they played teams that ranked above average in running back pass options, you know, throwing the ball to the running back out of the backfield, those teams recorded a 56% success rate on those passes. If that was over the course of the entire season, it would be the worst rate in the NFL the entire year. So I think that that's going to be an interesting matchup as well. So props that target the running back's catches or the running back receiving yardage, mm-hmm. I think could be interesting looks in this game.
Like it. I think that's all I got, Ross.
You know, it's interesting, Warren, because I'll give Joe Banner credit. He, the former Eagles president and Browns president, has said for a while on Twitter that the best matchup in the NFL is throwing the ball to your running backs against the opposing team's linebackers, because that's the matchup. I mean, when your running back's in the game, they're not going to have all DBs in the game. So that's the matchup. And it just seems like you look at these teams, even Le'Veon Bell, and that is the best matchup. And I feel like with every passing year, to your point, I think we'll see even more and more of that. Teams realizing that's the best chance we have is to throw the ball to our running back against their linebackers, even better than our tight end against their safety or our wide receivers against their corners. That's the one where we can really expose them. Warren, you are the man. I mean, Blitzkrieg, some of the information you had about first down, really, really glad we were able to get you on. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me. Always a great time.
Thanks,
absolutely,
Warren.
Check him out on Twitter at a minimum, @SharpFootball. Then you can click on his new website and all the great stuff that Warren has for you. That guy is the man. I mean, awesome information across the board. I loved it. He is going to be one of our go-to guys. And really, he should be one of your go-to guys when you're playing over at DraftKings, because he's got the information, and DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy sports. Tiger Woods is back, so if you want to continue playing DFS, even though football DFS is over, you can even draft Tiger. Check it out by going to DraftKings.com. They got other sports, baseball, soccer, MMA, basically whatever you want. The DFS train does not have to slow down just because football is over. You can keep it rolling with these other sports, including golf. Remember, though, tournaments begin Thursday mornings for golf, so hurry to DraftKings.com now if you want to get involved for this weekend. Use the promo code FEAST to play for free. That's promo code FEAST to play free for your share of $10,000 in total prizes only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
The email address, ross@rostucker.com. Again, ross@rostucker.com. We got one this week, Evan. Hopefully we'll get some more this week, and we'll be able to answer them next week. But this comes to us from Gleb in Union City, New Jersey. Remember, if you take advantage of any of our sponsors, DraftKings, Rich Uncles, BetDSI, TrueCar, any of the ones over at RossTucker.com, and forward them to me, I guarantee we will read and respond to them on the podcast. So anyway, Evan, Gleb from Union City, I have a couple of questions for Evan. During the 2016 draft season, Evan and a lot of fantasy football analysts recommended drafting top wide receivers over the top running backs. With the 2016 year wrapped up and dominant seasons by Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, and Ezekiel Elliott, are you planning to change your draft strategy for the upcoming year? He goes on to note DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins, a bunch of guys that did not have good years.
Yeah, I think that the goal always to trying to find value at the top of the fantasy draft, anywhere in the fantasy draft, is to try to find market inefficiencies and trying to figure out who is being overvalued, who is being undervalued. Are positions in general being overvalued? A couple of years ago, probably running backs were a little bit overvalued. This past year, in hindsight, I think we can say that wide receivers may have been a little bit overvalued. However, we also don't want to be fully results-based, because these guys who, we were plenty high on David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott, these guys had good fortune as well. They stayed healthy. They were in almost ideal situations. They were being fed at incredible clips. They all played at worst average offenses. A lot of things just went right for them. And I expect, Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson and to definitely be the first two picks off the board in most fantasy drafts next year. And then Ezekiel Elliott will probably be a top five pick as well. But I think that as we go through the process and we try to understand, or we will have a much better understanding of where people are valuing these players and where people are valuing positions, we are going to continue to try to find inefficiencies in the market that we can exploit. I think that heading into 2017, and I haven't even, I'm not there yet. But I think that this early in the process, I think that, I'm still going to have a lot of wide receivers ranked really, really high. Because for the most part, they are lower risk investments. than running backs. And these three running backs, and I think you could actually add DeMarco Murray into that group. He would probably be number four there. These guys had great fortune, were in very good situations, were fed the ball just at ridiculous clips. And that, it could very easily come back that a couple of these guys go down and, zero running back or wide receiver heavy drafting turns out to be the optimal strategy for 2017.
I love it. Speaking of wide receiver, Evan, how about you? That video you texted me, you love that Julian Edelman video. You love that.
Yeah, well, I saw that this Julian Edelman video was being passed around Twitter. It's of Julian Edelman talking to a referee during a game where he's mic'd up. Julian Edelman is mic'd up. And the referee, he didn't get called for a flag, but the referee said, hey, man, you got to kind of watch it. And Julian Edelman, kind of got defensive, and he made a joke that, yeah, my therapist tells me that I get too defensive. And that was most people's takeaway, that they thought that was like a funny line that he said. But when he's having this exchange with the linesman or the referee, he also cites the rule book and in discussing what he is able to do according to the rule book when a defensive back puts his hands on Julian Edelman. And Julian Edelman was like, I can bat down that dude's hand. And I was like, wow, that's real interesting that he is like citing the rule book, which, is not something. I mean, I don't know, did he read the rule book? And then I sent you the GIF and I was like, Ross, what do you think of this? So I wanted the listeners to kind of listen to you talk about that.
So, by the way, that was on like Sound FX and is on a bunch of different shows, and that was from the Texans game last Saturday, in the divisional round, and I interviewed him after the game for Westwood One. He was my post game interview, and you can hear me go up to him after the game and say, as about to interview me, I go, hey man, you get a business card for this. I mean, a business card. I said, you get a gift card for this. He's like, oh yeah, oh where? And the guy that my sideline producer Rob says Morton's, and this is another funny line from Julian that got attention. He says, I'm vegan. So a lot of people heard that audio because he was mic'd up for the whole game, and he's obviously a funny guy and a tremendous player. And you asked me does he really read the rule book? He doesn't read the rule book, but Belichick probably does the best job of any coach I've ever been around of really explaining the rule book to make sure guys know what they're allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do. Like, did you know, Evan, that if the quarterback leaves the pocket, you can't really get called for defensive holding at that point or interference?
I did know that. I did.
But there's a lot of people that don't know that.
Right.
And I think sometimes you watch games and you see a rookie defender and it's like, dude, the quarterback's out of the pocket. Go kill that guy. You know what I mean? That's remember when Richard Sherman just totally blasted somebody?
Yes.
And people were like, how is that not interference? And Sherman was like, maybe you guys should read the rule book. Well, mm-hmm. He didn't read the rule book either. But the coaches explain to him, hey, when that guy's out of the pocket, you are allowed to drill him. And sometimes it's not a coincidence that the good teams do this. You know what I mean? Marty Schottenheimer was big on the rule book with us. Certainly Belichick was. Parcells was big on explaining the rules and what you can and cannot do. That is a huge advantage. And Edelman was just mentioning that if the defender engages with him, he's allowed to push off him, to get off him, if the defender started the contact. So those guys are very well educated in terms of what they can and cannot do. And frankly, Evan, that is a detail that I bet you some of the bad teams and some of the bad coaches haven't gotten into. Some of these first-year coaches or whatever, they're just trying to get everything straight. they don't remember to take the time to make sure every rule that could be at their advantage. It's like the Even Money podcast where Steve Fezzik always – it drives him crazy where in certain situations at the end of the first half or whatever or the end of the game that the defenders don't just tackle the offensive players and take the 5-yard holding penalty but have the clock go all the way down. Okay, they get an untimed down, but you just took 10 seconds off the clock or 7 seconds off the clock, so they only get one play now instead of two.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. It like set off a light bulb in my brain, and I was like, oh, man, I got it. Who can I ask about this? And I was like, oh, of course, Ross would know. And you were like, oh, Belichick just hammers the rule book. And it makes a lot of sense, man. I mean, that is, you know, these teams are trying to get an edge in every single area. And especially for a guy like Julian Edelman, who is, I mean, he's a slot receiver. He's running like through a ton of traffic. So for him to be able to, for him to understand, you know, what are the little things that he can do to give himself an advantage when he's, you know, I mean, he's always going to have a bunch of defenders around him because he's usually like close to the line of scrimmage, running over the middle, you know, having to weave in and out of linebackers and, you know, dealing with slot corners and safeties, et cetera. And for him to know that he can just bat down the dude's hand, hey, man, you know, that's a big advantage for him.
Without question. Good question, Evan. I like it. And it's not a coincidence that the good teams know what the rules are and take advantage of them so that they win, make more money, and then when they make that money, perhaps they go to richuncles.com, which is a REIT or a real estate investment trust. You know, there's a lot of change and uncertainty right now. It's nice to get an investment with a monthly cash dividend, which right now is 7% annualized. It's ideal for IRAs, for those of you that have IRAs. Rich Uncles REIT is a Reg A Tier 2 offering. It's an investment, so it has some risks. It's not guaranteed, which is why I would encourage you to learn more at richuncles.com. That's richuncles.com, or you can call 855-RICH-UNCLES. Either way, when you go to check out this real estate investment trust, it's a private real estate investment trust that you can get in on. Let them know you heard about them from a Ross Tucker podcast, in particular the Fantasy Feast podcast.
Rich Uncles REIT is seeking indications of interest concerning its Reg A Tier 2 securities offering. Any indication of interest involves no obligation or commitment of any kind. No money or other consideration is being solicited, and if sent, response will not be accepted. No sales will be made or commitments to purchase accepted until the offering statement is qualified. This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by Rich Uncles for this single message.
That'll do it for the feast this week. A little different, not breaking down a game, but I loved it. Warren was awesome. The question from Gleb about receivers versus running backs next year was awesome. Evan, your question about Edelman and the rules was awesome. Good show. Our first show, not breaking down games, I loved it. There's a lot more where that came from throughout the offseason. Next week, we'll get into the Super Bowl props. Should be really, really fun. You know the deal about spreading the word via social media, iTunes, rankings, comments. Always appreciate it. We got the Amazon banner ad, the PayPal contributors as well. Other than that, I am stuffed. We're finished.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.